War Room, Impeachment. With Stephen K. Bannon, Jason Miller, and Raheem Kassam. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome to War Room Impeachment. It's the 1st of December, the year of our Lord 2019. It's episode 53. We're at the Breitbart Embassy. We are live on the John Fredericks Radio Network, Salem Broadcasting Radio Network, America's Voice.news, and on Newsmax TV, the fastest growing cable news channel in the country, now passing 70 million homes. Special program note, Chris Ruddy, founder, CEO, and chairman of Newsmax, will be in studio tomorrow. Matt Gaetz will be also a guest, but Chris Ruddy will be in studio. I'm joined now by Greg Mons and Jack Maxey. Greg ran the communications for the Trump 2016 in Pennsylvania, the state we had to win and did win. Jack Maxey ran our War Room in 2018 in the midterm elections. On the phone is Jason Miller, War Room, and the senior communication strategist for the Trump 26 campaign. We've got Cleta Mitchell, one of the most renowned conservative lawyers, former member of board member of American Conservative Union, the NRA, CPAC, a host of others, Mark Meadows' attorney, and one of the great members of the conservative movement. Also, Lee Smith's in studio. We're going to get to this later. A fabulous book, The Plot Against the President. We're going to get into it deep today. I've also got an anonymous warning. We're going to talk about that. Steve Cortez can call in about China and Hong Kong. There's so much to go through. That's why every day news is breaking. That's why we're here 7 days a week live, 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. until the day after the acquittal of Donald J. Trump, the 45th president of the United States. This is the one-stop shop you can go to get all of your impeachment news 1 hour a day on the podcast, the radio show, on cable, on live streaming, on americasvoice.news. Also on warroom.org, 24 hours a day, Greg, Jack, and the team led by Raheem Kassam. Raheem have the day off since he worked through the Thanksgiving holiday, so he's currently on assignment over at Morton's Restaurant, cleaning up from the night before. Okay, we're going to get to it. There's a lot going on. I want to start with Jason Miller. Jason, there's been a lot of changes happening in Atlanta. What we know right now is that the report is going to be given to the committee by shift, I think, Monday evening at 6 o'clock. Is that what they're talking about? Monday evening. It's going to be released on Tuesday evening. There's going to be a hearing with constitutional lawyers. There's always already a fight about that. Cleta Mitchell is going to get us up to speed on Collins's letter. And then they're talking about another hearing the following week to really lay out the case about the president and then to vote on, as I've been saying, Friday, December 20th, or Saturday, December 21st, before they leave for Thanksgiving on the articles of impeachment. Jason, can you get us up to speed on the shifting nature of this inquiry?
Absolutely, and good morning, Steve, and the rest of the team. Four big things coming up this week that everyone needs to have on their radar screen. And Steve, we've had split-screen presidencies so far in this administration, probably none bigger than this week. So as you laid out on Monday, the House Majority Intel Committee report will be available to members. But we know, Steve, that means leaks galore. So all the worst parts of it will get leaked out, and that news cycle really will start, I imagine, some point, even though it's supposed to be available later on Monday, some point early on Monday, that cycle will start. So members on the Intel Committee have 24 hours to review that before they vote on this majority report on Tuesday. On Wednesday, then, as you mentioned,
Jason, can we get you to call back in? We're having a tough time at your remote location. We're having a tough time.
Absolutely.
Just call back in. Okay. Here's the two things that are going in the split screen presidency is that we're having a major visit to NATO. Remember, this thing comes down to the America First national security policy, as we've been talking about. So we're going to be at NATO. And a lot of people are talking about Macron actually laying a trap for President Trump at NATO to talk about the European army. But I think what's most important about this is that we do have President Trump. There's a big announcement over the weekend that now for the first time, the percentages in the payments into NATO are now finally going in America's way. It's not America's abandoning this alliance. America's trying to reinforce the alliance. That's what President Trump's trying to do by getting the European nations to meet their previous commitments of 2% of their GDP to pay into NATO. And that is something that came up. They agreed to prior to President Trump coming aboard. He's just trying to reinforce it, and that gets down to the whole Ukraine situation, where you had these unelected bureaucrats of the foreign policy establishment, and we're not questioning their patriotism. We're not questioning their direction. It's just they've got a very different idea about this. We've got so we're going to have the report now. I want to break a little news. We do know from people on Capitol Hill, and we're pretty well sourced over there, that the Republican minority report will just stick to the facts. The Republican minority report will just lay out exactly from an evidentiary basis exactly what happened. I believe you can take that minority report and you're going to be able to see exactly what was what we're able to put into the trial in the Senate, because they are definitely going to bring a couple articles of impeachment. Okay, we're trying to get Jason Miller on the phone, but for time's sake, let's bring in Cleta Mitchell now. Cleta, welcome. Thank you very much for joining us on Sunday morning here on War Room Impeachment.
Hello.
Hey, how you doing, Cleta? You got us?
I'm good.
Hey.
Yes, now I do. How are you?
Good. Listen, here's what I want to talk about, the administrative state. But first off, you've reviewed Collins's letter to yes. Jerry Nadler. Give us what do you think Collins is trying to get across here? Can you summarize the letter and exactly what's happening?
Well, I think what Collins was trying to do is to make clear to everyone that the Republicans have nothing to say about what's getting ready to unfold, that the Democrats are in total control, that they've decided who the witnesses are going to be on the first panel. The first hearing is going to open with Lawrence Tribe, who's been calling for impeachment of President Trump since 2017.
Hold on. He's a Mark 1 Mod 0 hater. Right, he's a Trump hater. So you open him with Larry Tribe is always a good one, right?
Yes, exactly. So I think Doug Collins, Congressman Collins, who is the ranking member on Judiciary, is taking over the role that Devin Nunes played in the Schiff show in the Intelligence Committee, because he's showing to the American people by virtue of this letter, hey, we'd like some witnesses. We'd like to have the opportunity to call some constitutional experts who will tell everyone, as we've heard on War Room Impeachment, that there is no constitutional basis for impeaching this president. And I think by sending that letter, he says, we don't have any witnesses. We have nothing to say about who's going to appear. Everybody just needs to know this is now the Jerry Nadler show, just as it was the Adam Schiff show.
Do you believe that Nadler will concede and let the Republicans call any constitutional witnesses at all?
No. And if they do, it will only be perhaps one witness out of 10 or 12 or however many the Democrats have already set up to testify. So, no, there's not going to be anything like parity, opportunity for due process, fairness, and I think that Doug Collins' letter is laying that out for everybody, just so we'll know from the outset that they don't really know yet what they're doing. They are making it up as they go along, just as they did before. The only thing I think we know is that there are going to be at least two rounds of hearings, one with all these constitutional experts that have already made up their mind and hate Trump, and they've been calling for impeachment for 3 years, and then we know that at some point there's going to be some report from the impeachment.
Yeah, I think what we're seeing right now, a report gets released from House Intel on Tuesday. They have the Nadler show on Wednesday with the constitutional lawyers led by leadoff batter Lawrence Tribe. They then the following week are going to come back and I think have a day of hearings to lay out the case to go that. In fact, Cleta, just hang on for 1 second. We'll come right back to you. I want to get Jason Miller on. Jason, do we have a better connection with Jason Miller? Jason, can you hear me?
Yep, Steve, I'm here. Hopefully I'm in a much better location.
Fantastic. Okay, let's go back through. Take it from the top, and let's go back through this order of battle we've got for the next week or so that's changing every day.
Absolutely. Right. So as I said before, this is the split-screen presidency, if we've ever seen it, while the president is in London for NATO's 70th anniversary meetings. But here, back home, we're going to see Monday, the House Majority Intel Committee report. This is what Adam Schiff and the rest of his partisan hacks have been putting together. That will be released to members on Monday. They will have 24 hours to review it before they vote on this intel report on Tuesday. That will be, they'll be voting it out of committee to hand over to the Judiciary Committee. Obviously, that will pass on a party line basis. On Wednesday, this is when the real circus comes to town. Actually, the whole week, Steve, is probably going to be a circus. But Wednesday, Jerry Nadler has a committee meeting in titled, get this, The Impeachment Inquiry into President Donald J. Trump, Constitutional Grounds for Presidential Impeachment. But, Steve, as you mentioned, you're going to see the Lawrence Tribes of the world, but you're not going to see the David Rivkins. You're not going to see the Alan Dershowitzes. You're not going to see the even the Jonathan Turleys, who have been leaning more in our direction as this has been going on. This is why Doug Collins sent that nastygram to Jerry Nadler over the weekend saying, hey, we need some fairness in the entire process. And then, as you mentioned, going into next week is when we'll see a second Judiciary Committee hearing. This one will be where actually Adam Schiff comes over to Judiciary. They lay out the case for impeachment against President Trump. But this whole thing is going to be a made-for-TV production, and it's going to be going on at the same time that President Trump is trying to get our NATO allies to pay their fair share.
Yeah, now there will be split screen. Trump will be in London this week, correct? He'll be for the 70th anniversary of NATO. He's there, I think he's there later in the week, 5th and 6th, for the 70th anniversary.
So Tuesday and Wednesday. So on Tuesday, he'll be meeting with NATO Secretary General Stoltenberg, also meeting with President Macron of France. And then Tuesday evening, the NATO leaders will be getting together with Queen Elizabeth II. And then on Wednesday, the day that they have this House Judiciary Committee meeting, President Trump will be meeting with Chancellor Angela Merkel of Germany, and then we'll have a working lunch with a number of the Baltic states. And then later in the day, he'll be seeing Prime Ministers Frederiksen of Denmark and Conte of Italy.
But this is perfect because it's the General Secretary, Stoltenberg, of NATO that's asked President Trump to really help him, assist him in getting these countries to pay their full share. And I think that this is another chance for President Trump to step up on the world stage, or as Phil Rucker of the Washington Post calls it, just to have another photo op, according to another hater, Phil Rucker. So those are supposed to be news stories, by the way, Phil, not opinion pieces, right?
Steve, you know, in the Wall Street Journal has a piece this morning also previewing the president's trip, and I made a comment in there that one of the most underreported dynamics of President Trump winning in 2016 was this America First platform and the fact that President Trump was going to get our NATO allies and other allies around the world to pay their fair share. And so this is a critical foreign policy dynamic, one of the linchpins of President Trump getting elected in 2016, but it's going to be drowned out as we're staring at the lovely Jerry Nadler and the rest of the judiciary folks hammering President Trump when we don't even have witnesses or constitutional experts on our side.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned Turley. I want to turn to Cleta Mitchell. Cleta's the great conservative lawyer, represents so many of the grassroots organizations, really somebody many people have come to depend on in this area of not-for-profit law. Cleta, you had mentioned to me over the weekend, it was talked about, you come on the show, Jonathan Turley. And how Jonathan Turley, as Jason just said, seems to have kind of flipped. I mean, he's no Trump devotee. He's no Trump advocate. Can you assess what Turley's done here?
Well, if people may have seen this in the Friday weekend edition of the Wall Street Journal, Jonathan Turley, who is a law professor at GW Law School, George Washington University Law School, and he went through the historic basis for the actual language in the Constitution, for the basis for which impeachment proceedings can be brought against the executive. And he goes back more than 200 years before the founding, when talking about how there was an effort in the British Parliament to impeach a governor of the realm, and how our founding fathers really studied and discussed at length what terminology should be included in the Constitution as the basis for impeachment. And what the Democrats are saying, what he writes, is how the Democrats are completely disregarding the constitutional history and language. But I think the most important thing in this article, and I do hope that there's a way to post at least a portion of that on the website, but one of the things he says in buried down in the historic information is that this is the speediest, most truncated impeachment proceeding in American history, with the thinnest of evidence against the sitting president, and how it really does not rise to the level of an impeachable. Nothing rises to the level of impeachable offenses. And how our founding fathers specifically rejected some of the notions that Adam Schiff and the Democrats are putting forward. And then he throws into this piece that he represented a judge who was the subject of impeachment, and it failed, and Adam Schiff was the impeachment manager, citing to the same principles he's citing today against President Trump. It's a really important piece, but he kind of buries his lead.
Yeah, we're going to get that up. That's from the Wall Street Journal. They've had so many great pieces of Rifkin, Turley, others. We're going to get that up on the site, warroom.org, 24/7. Okay. We're always pressed for time here because we only got an hour a day. I want to turn Cleta back to you for a second. We've got Lee Smith here. Lee Smith's got an amazing book, The Plot Against the President, which talks about the deep state. We've got the anonymous book here that we're going to be talking about all throughout the week that also talks about the deep state, or what I call the in-your-face state, or what Anonymous calls the steady state. But there's a blockbuster book coming out on Tuesday by Ruth Marcus from the Washington Post. I think it's called Supreme Ambition. It's about the Gorsuch and Kavanaugh's appointment to the Supreme Court. And we talk here a lot about those two individuals, about the administrative state. You're an expert in the administrative state. I believe this is one of the reasons in back of why the Democrats are so focused on not just defeating Trump at the polls, but trying to impeach and remove him today, or at least try to scar him so much, is his full-on attack about the administrative state. Very briefly, Cleta, because we're going to get into the next segment with Lee Smith on the deep state and their attack on President Trump. The administrative state, what's the definition of it? Why is it important? What should be people focus on? And what has Donald Trump tried to do to deconstruct it?
All right. Well, let me try to do this in 25 words or less. This is not easy. Our Constitution calls for three branches of government: legislative, executive, and judicial. What has happened since FDR days over the past century is that the lines between the legislative and the executive have blurred, because Congress has delegated rulemaking, which is essentially a legislative obligation, to all these executive agencies. And there have been court decisions over the years that have upheld this delegation of legislative authority from the legislative branch to the executive branch. What Gorsuch and Kavanaugh and the three other conservatives on the court understand is that delegating, for Congress to delegate its legislative authority, violates the separation of powers of the Constitution. If you have another couple of court decisions where courts then have given deference to these agencies, these federal agencies. So you go to court against a federal agency, there's a thumb on the scale that says that federal agency starts the game with a runner on base. And the conservative majority of the court now is looking at this historic, almost, you know, more than 100 years of constitutional decisions by the court, and saying, those were wrong. We've got 84 years of precedent that we need to revisit, because there's a separation of powers problem. And how that manifests itself is that we are increasingly, in a postmodern America, have been governed by unelected bureaucrats, faceless, nameless bureaucrats and agencies who act at will without specific congressional authority. And I think that the left understands that's where their power comes from. And President Trump has come into office, and he's done a number of things, not the least of which is rolling back regulation, that he's appointing judges, and now two new justices to the Supreme Court, who are willing to revisit
This is the key for conservatives. This is the key fight in the future. It's not so much social Roe v. Wade and gay marriage and other things, as important as they may be for some conservatives. It is this full-on attack against the administrative state, which has really become anti-democratic in that it's election-proof. It just continues to grow and grow and grow. That's why at the appellate level, at the Supreme Court, and I think a lot at the trial judge level on the federal bench, you're seeing, you know, President Trump really take the fight against the administrative state, these unelected bureaucrats, which is one of the reasons we've got this entire situation. This is a national security. It's different. But these unelected bureaucrats that want their own foreign policy in this entire impeachment process. How do you think this battle's going, Cleta?
Well, I think the president is winning on this battle. And, you know, just honestly, listening to these career bureaucrats testifying before the Intelligence Committee, you're sitting there saying, who elected you? Why should any court give deference to your opinion? We've learned about this thing called the Interagency Consensus, which is a decision that a bunch of non-elected career Foreign Service people have agreed is the U.S. foreign policy, and apparently there's one for every country in the world, that exists quite apart from what the President of the United States says he thinks the foreign policy of the United States should be toward any given country. So a lot of this impeachment, these shenanigans have actually shined a light on these cockroach bureaucrats. And now we're seeing this is who makes our policy, this is who carries out our policy, and they are not happy about the great disruptor, Donald Trump, saying, I don't think I want to do it that way anymore.
Jason, here's what – thank you, Clea. Jason, this is what – the politics of this and the optics of this, do you believe that this will be a more frontal line of attack in the rest of this impeachment process as the Democrats try to jam this through and get these two articles up, or three articles maybe, and then go to trial? Do you think this whole onslaught against the administrative state will take more front and center?
Absolutely. I mean, we're starting to see, just as Cleta said, I mean, the fact that we have the Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindmans of the world, that we have the Jennifer Williams of the world, that we have George Kent, who's tooling around in Arlington, Virginia with free Crimea license plates, actually the matching multilingual his and hers license plates that they have. I mean, these folks are no longer the independent arbiters. They're just implementing policy. They're trying to make it under their own vision. And I think you're going to see a lot more pushback on this for the right. And Steve, I wouldn't say this even just through the impeachment. I'd say this will be going all the way into the next election. The fact
Amen.
That President Trump is,
Amen.
When you're saying running against the swamp, this is what we're talking about.
This is the swamp's a cutesy firm, but this is this permanent political class. Cleta, I want to thank you so much for joining us. We're going to have you back in after this Wednesday fiasco. Cleta, let me ask you right before you go, if you had one draft pick on the conservative side to put up there on Wednesday, who would it be?
I think it would be Alan Dershowitz.
Alan Dershowitz. Okay, thank.
Because he didn't vote for President Trump, but he's a constitutionalist.
Cleta Mitchell, thank you very much for joining us. Jason, I want you to hold through the break. We're going to take a commercial break, a short commercial break, and we will return on War Room Impeachment, Episode 53. We've got Lee Smith. We just heard Cleta Mitchell talking about the administrative state. We're going to return and talk about the deep state and many of the people involved in this, in the whole drafting of the Minority Report. The plot against the president, Lee Smith, next on War Room Impeachment.
Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome back to War Room Impeachment, 1 December, the year of our Lord, 2019, Episode 53 from the Breitbart Embassy on the John Frederick Radio Network, the Salem Broadcast Radio Network, AmericasVoice.news, and Newsmax TV. Chris Ruddy, the founder and CEO of Newsmax, will be in studio tomorrow to walk us through his views on this really incredible week in the impeachment. We've got Jason Miller on the line with us, Greg Manns and Jack Maxey in studio, and also the author Lee Smith, The Plot Against the President. First thing I want to ask you, Lee, by the way, the book's fantastic. Everybody should read it. It is not an easy read because this is such a complicated, detailed The Plot Against the President, but it's laid out in all the footnotes. You can check everything. I'm in the book Deep State by saying that it's not a deep state because it's in your face. Mm-hmm. Anonymous causes a steady state.
Right.
Cleta Mitchell just gave a major analysis of the administrative state, these unelected bureaucrats. Why do you call it a deep state? Why? What's the difference between a deep state and the administrative state in your mind?
Right. I mean, I distinguish in a chapter in the book, the phrase deep state is actually comes from hard security states in the Middle East, Turkey, Pakistan, Egypt, something like that. What we're talking about here in the United States, it's, as I say in the book, it's a softer quality. These are not people who carry daggers in between their teeth, right? These are people who trade craft beer and grilling tips on the weekends. So it's not the same thing, but that they are invested and embedded in bureaucracies and that these networks extend. One of the one of the important facts about what's been going on the last couple of years, the anti-Trump operation. The network includes not just people involved in the government and the bureaucracies, but also in the press and also in the think tank community, right, as it's described here in Washington.
And we're going in that. A couple things, because this is timely. The reason I want to have you in today is that many of the actors or characters are involved in this minority report that's going to come, or the majority report that's going to come up, and the people that were interviewed. But you don't have a tinfoil hat. You actually were at the Village Voice. You were the literary editor of the Village Voice. You were for 7 years at the Weekly Standard on national security. You come from a deep background, and you're not you have not traditionally been a right winger, correct?
Yeah. Okay.
What I'm saying, you don't come from a tinfoil hat. From block sites. Right. You come from reputable Village Voice. Standard.
Right. It's interesting what you say, because those two things, the Village Voice. I grew up in New York. Everyone there, when we used to have a genuine press corps, everyone understood who Donald Trump was, and he may have been many things, but the idea that Donald Trump is somehow compromised by the Russian state is preposterous. So that was an important aspect of it. And then again, looking at foreign policy and looking at national security, understanding that this was an operation run by Obama officials and Clinton operatives, just like they ran other operations like the Iran deal echo chamber.
So on Monday night, we're getting a report from Schiff, from the House Intel, in a minority report from Devin Nunes. And the subtitle of this book is The True Story of How Congressman Devin Nunes Uncovered the Biggest Political Scandal in U.S. History. The actors that put forward this report and what you've seen over the last, is this just a continuation of your book?
Yeah. Ukraine Gate impeachment right now is how they turned it into, or is what Russiagate became. The dates are very important, and we see this in the transcript of Trump's phone call with Zelensky, right? He's talking about Robert Mueller the day before, July 24th, and it looks like this is rolling up. But at the very same time, the same crew of people, CIA, an active CIA officer who was also involved in Russiagate, he has recruited someone in the White House to spy on the president. The phone call is July 25th, July 26th, there's a memo, right? So it's the same exact operation, and it's hardly any mistake that it's about Ukraine, because Ukraine is the center of Russia.
When you say
Russia
an active
Gate,
CIA officer recruited someone in the White House, be specific on that, because that's not the book stops before then, obviously.
Yeah, right.
What do you mean by that?
What I mean
is, that's a pretty big charge.
Yeah. Well, what I mean is what we saw over the last 2 weeks, while we were looking at different unelected bureaucrats making claims about the strategic centrality of Ukraine, there was one very important fact that came out in a number of different testimonies from Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, Representative Jackie Speier, who was, of course, not testifying but asking questions. What we understand is that the colonel of the operation was the whistleblower who had been working on the NSC staff, had effectively recruited someone who was still on the NSC staff, who is Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, who then reported to the whistleblower about the president's phone call.
Recruited means they did it beforehand. This was not Vindman and others going to the whistleblower and just saying, I'm very disturbed by what I've heard, and then he went into whistleblower mode. By saying recruited, you're basically saying before the fact, before actually the phone call, before these events took place. What evidence do you have to back that up?
I think if we're looking at the structure of the NSC staff, and if we're looking at the different people that came forth over the last couple of weeks, like Fiona Hill, these were people who were all, who all perceived the president in one way, and who all perceived Russia-Ukraine matters in one way.
How do they perceive the president, and how do they perceive these Russia-Ukraine?
Well, I mean, again, they perceive Ukraine as a strategic partner, as Lieutenant Colonel Vindman described it, which is outrageous.
Why is it outrageous? A couple times they drum said it's an ally. Ukraine's not an ally of the United States. NATO's our allies. It may be some strategic partner or something, but what did you surmise from that?
Well, I mean, if you look at a map, and apparently our Russia-Ukraine experts are not looking at maps, Ukraine is a buffer state between a larger power to the east, Russia, and a superior power to the west right now called the European Union. So the idea that somehow Ukraine is going to be important against Russia is ridiculous. If Vladimir Putin, and this is why the aid actually that we're giving the Ukrainians is relatively pointless. If Vladimir Putin wanted to invade Ukraine, he would be on Poland's borders within 48 hours. The idea that somehow Ukraine is helping us push back against Russia also begs the question, why do we want to push back against Russia on those borders?
Okay, welcome back. We've had a slight technical problem. I think it was keyed off, guys. It was keyed off when Lee Smith said recruited. Then, hey, just saying, we've done 52 episodes and never had a problem. As soon as we talked to Deep State, the thing, I know there are no coincidences. Okay, I want to go, by the way, we're going to get to Steve. We're not going to have time to get to Steve Cortez today. We're going to put Steve Cortez's articles up about China and the economy. We're going to get to Steve Cortez sometime this week or maybe one of the special evening broadcasts. I want to stick because we lost a few minutes with Lee. Go back to that. What do you mean that this was an active program against the President of the United States? You're actually saying it's a plot. That is
right.
That am I supposed to put my tinfoil hat on for that, or is this real?
No. I mean, first of all, it starts before Trump is elected president. I mean, this starts sometime in the spring of 2016, and the media is invested in it at that point. They're getting briefed. They're getting.
What do you mean briefed? What do you mean invested?
Fusion GPS, the opposition research firm, is actually shopping information regarding Trump Russia to the press.
Now, GPS, that report, that dossier was originally commissioned by Republicans, commissioned by Paul Singer, correct?
No, it's actually interesting. They had hired them. They were working for them, and they were producing Trump Russia material. Right. The way that this originally started was they were that Fusion GPS was researching Trump's ties or the Trump team's alleged ties to organized crime. One of the fundamental things about this story and that I point to in the book is when they hire Christopher Steele, Steele's first report is June 20th, 2016. What Steele did was had nothing to do with opposition research or organized crime. Steele's report was about the Trump team's alleged ties to a state actor. The purpose of the dossier was to obtain a warrant to spy on the Trump campaign. That was the purpose. And what it looks like, if we look at this sudden transition, the what I call a proto-dossier about Trump's ties to Russia published, or they finish it at the end of May, at the end of May 2016, and within weeks, they go from organized crime to foreign state actors. So it looks
and that's
as though
they went and got the five stars. So the reason this is timely is that you have both the report and Jason, jump in here. You have both the report coming out that's going to be the backbone for actually the impeachment process. The report from Schiff that's going to go to has all these actors in it. And you have the Horowitz IG report that's going to come out Monday a week that, if you're correct, should at least start to talk about. It should dovetail with your book. Now, will Horowitz back up what you say? Or is your book going to land with a thud?
Yeah.
Because it's not, I mean, it's put up or shut up time, right?
Right.
Because you've had Horowitz have an IG investigation of essentially the material you go over. Am I not correct there?
Well, look, I mean, the center of the book, this is the story. This is the story as told by Devin Nunes, the California congressman, former chair and now ranking member of the Intelligence Committee. He and his team, they call their investigation Objective Medusa. These guys were looking at these issues for 2 years. They know what they were looking at. They know what the issues were. And so certainly the Inspector General's report, we can expect it to touch on many of the things. I hope that they also unravel a number of things that aren't in the book, that even the congressman and his team didn't find, that with the resources they have, with a number of people they were able to task to this, they found a lot. Remember, the congressman and his team, this was only 8 people, and they were fighting against overwhelming odds
when you
and resources.
Say, when you say 8 people, this is what I also don't understand. Right. This is why the election of 18 was so important. This is why Jack Maxey ran this war room here. This is why we fought for the House. We did have control of the executive branch. We had control of the Senate. Right. And most importantly, we had control of the House. And if memory serves me correctly, Devin Nunes was in Schiff's position. Why didn't Nunes, with that power, and I hear all this and I read the book, the book's a must read, particularly for conservatives. And I'm going to compare and contrast James Stewart's deep state with this. But we actually had the constitutional power to take this to the ultimate limit, to have hearings. We sent 40 subpoenas, correct me if I'm wrong, from different committees, but a lot from the House then, to Rosenstein that he sat on. It was never forced. What boggles people's minds is how do we have that power and authority, half-shift's position, where they know how to go on offense? Why are we sitting here with Lee Smith and in the war room, and you got, you know, Horowitz coming out with an IG report? Why wasn't this taken to its ultimate conclusion by the House Intelligence Committee, chaired by Devin Nunes, the hero of your book?
Look, it wasn't just them. We had problems, also enormous problems, at the Department of Justice. The Attorney General had been...
He had removed himself. I understand. He had recused himself, I think for reasons that he would have never gotten at it confirmed if he hadn't earlier. But you had Rosenstein. But the question is simple. Right. We had control of the apparatus. You avoid this in the book. Why didn't Devin Nunes and these people, you know, go to the president, talk to the president? I understand there's a lot of pushback. There's always pushback. You're working against what you guys call a deep state, what Anonymous calls a steady state. Why didn't you force their hands?
I mean, I think there were lots of ways in which they forced their hand. When they came out.
Schiff's got public hearings. He's parading one group of unelected bureaucrats, you know, the Cleta Mitchell, Lee Smith thesis. Right. He's got them up on national TV and he's impeaching the president. In a couple weeks, they're going to gun deck this thing with the constitutional lawyers. They're going to have two or three articles of impeachment in a historic effort. This is what I don't understand, and I'm not trying to be obnoxious. And I think this is what depresses sometimes conservatives out there to figure, I go knock on doors, I do all this, and when we have power, you had Paul Ryan, Nunes was removed.
He was pushed aside because of an ethics probe. And if you're asking why,
yes,
for instance, why Speaker of the House did not say that to hell with these guys.
Nancy Pelosi's on a roll.
Right.
Where was Paul Ryan?
You can stay exactly where you are. No, if you're asking why are Republicans deferential nonsense.
I'm asking why this book was not in public testimony by the House Intelligence Committee when we ran the House Intelligence Committee. Why did Lee Smith have to write a book afterwards and talk about a plot against the president and end up in the Breitbart embassy on a Sunday morning talking about it? Why didn't, you know, comparing about what Schiff has made a global, and now we're forced into a constitutional crisis. Why was this not part of public hearings a year ago?
Why we do not have the resources, why we do not understand how to use the power that we have, that is a question. I mean,
I'm a simple country boy. Asking a question.
How about this?
Why are we going through all this rigmarole now on this crisis? Right. And when we had the absolute power to do it, I could have had Lee Smith's book about the hearings of the thing and the impeachment of Nancy Pelosi or whoever.
Here's something that boggles me still, that there are still people after what we've seen and after I documented in the book what the press has become, what the Washington Post, what the prestige brands of American journalism have become, and nonetheless, there are Republicans only blocks from here who are more than happy to treat, whether it's the Washington Post, the New York Times, CNN, MSNBC, as though these are regular news networks still, even after 3 years of seeing them operate like media operatives.
You believe they're the opposition party, the opposition party media, right? You believe
it's not a media; it's a platform for intelligence operations. It's not media at all.
Okay, we're gonna.
This is like the Arab press.
We're gonna have a deeper dive with Lee Smith. One last thing: have you been on any CNN, MSNBC? Has the mainstream media had you on at all?
No, I mean I attack all of them, so I don't believe they want to give me any air.
Jason, we've got about a minute and a half left. Are you still with us?
I sure am. And Lee, what I want to know is how is the conservative media allowing this Kevin Kleinsmith, the FBI lawyer who intentionally doctored this FISA application, how is the media being able to portray him as this low-level bumpkin when in reality he's going to be going to jail for a long time? This is real serious stuff here.
I mean, he certainly did something very bad. He forged evidence. That's what it looks like. Why is the, I mean, how is the media allowed to portray it like that? Because again, all of them are invested in it. If you look at the different reporters at the Times and the Post and CNN who are reporting on the IG report, these are all people with a stake and pushing it like this.
Okay, the book is The Plot Against the President. We're actually going to do a special with Lee Smith. I want to compare and contrast James Stewart's book, Deep State. This is War Room Impeachment, episode 53. Go to all of the platforms, iTunes, whatever, get your latest update. Go to warroom.org. We're going to update Lee Smith's interview. We're going to have other breaking news up there. Tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock, we'll be back live. Chris Ruddy, the founder of Newsmax, and Matt Gaetz, the one and only.